is the evidifery. Okay. The Ela Mishpatim Hashatatim Ufnehem. These are the Mishpatim that you shall place before them. Kisikne Evidivri. If you should acquire an Evidivri. What is an Evidivri? Rashi goes, there's a lot of Rashis over here, this Parsha. But it doesn't mean an Evid Shelivri. It doesn't mean a Gentile slave. In other words, there's two types of slave in the Torah. There's the Gentile slave, and that the other term slave is more applicable, even though the same word is used, Eved. Interesting. In truth, that's something I just thought of. The same term shouldn't be used, because an Eved Ivri is a Jewish. I wouldn't use the word slave, though. You know, you're familiar a little bit with Eved Ivri, right? It means, as we'll see, how does a person become an Eved Ivri? A Jewish... I'll use the word servant. I don't like to use the word slave. But the Torah does use the same term, Eved. The reason why I say it's two different things is because when you think of the term slave, which means to say a person who is actually like almost like chattel, he's owned, right? A slave is basically a piece of property, in fact. When you think of slave, you really think of human property. But a person owns another person. That's the concept of slavery. Of course, today the whole world recognizes that that's an immoral, unacceptable type of thing, that one person should be the property of another person. The Torah, however, did have a system, an institution of Eved, but we have to understand that philosophically it wasn't because the Torah was inhumane, or the Torah didn't care about the Gentiles. There's a philosophy behind it. I'm not taking that up today, though. But that conforms more to the general idea in terms of property. The Eved Kenani, the Gentile Eved, was really property. It was really property. And your control over him was very great. He didn't have any independent rights of his own in terms of possession, in terms of ownership. And he was at your disposal, like a piece of property. Now, it wasn't for the sake of mistreating. You weren't allowed to mistreat him. And really, the whole purpose of it was to elevate him, because he goes through tefillah and circumcision. It's really a transitional phase towards reaching a higher level. You see? It's an opportunity for him to be exposed to the ideas of Yah. This is really for his benefit. But in halakhically speaking, the way it's set up, there is an institution of Eved. In other words, you do own him, and he does work for you, and so forth. That's not the case by Eved Ivri. An Eved Ivri is not a piece of chattel. You don't own him. It's rather a contractual relationship in which you have to work for him for a certain period of time, and in exchange he provides your basic needs, right? Now, yeah. It's like a job, but it's not a 9-to-5 thing. Yeah, in other words, there is a ownership. In other words, in the sense that you have ownership over his work. It's not ownership over his body, though. You do have. It's more than, however. Because he can't quit. He can't quit. It's a more comprehensive relationship. There is a master. You see, he's called an Adon. He is a master over him. Now, how a person became a... how did you become an Eved Ivri? There were two ways. Bezdin. Or you could sell yourself. In other words, Bezdin had the right to sell you when you stole and you couldn't pay back the money. Of course, the penalty for stealing is to pay back what you stole. So if a person stole and he couldn't pay back the money, so Bezdin would sell him as an Eved Ivri. However, if the person was impoverished and he couldn't get by, couldn't support himself, sustain himself, then he had permission to sell himself as a slave. I'm using the word slave loosely. An Eved Ivri. Okay? So let's study the psukim here, become very interesting. And I want to see if you could spot the basic problems over here, basic issues. I just want to say, though, that in general, the Eved Ivri is a Jew for all purposes. In other words, his status is the status of a Jew. He's chayav in all mitzvos. He performs all mitzvos. His status is different with regard to only one thing. What's that? Anybody? No, 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 no. His status is different only with regard to the fact that he can marry a shifcha. The master has a if the master owns a Gentile slave woman, so then he can give her as a wife, a temporary wife. It's not a real kedushin to the eved for the purpose of having children. These children, as we'll soon see, become the property of the master. They're not real. He's not really the father, because if you father a child by a Gentile woman, you're not the father halachically. So these children are slaves. That's the only. But normally, this is usur. In other words, it's usur to have a relation with a shifcha, with a Gentile woman. So it's a special mat here in this particular case. That's the only respect in which we see that the status of an eved is not just on the monetary. It's also a status with regard to issur v'heter. You follow? Now, I also want to mention that the Torah was very, very strict with regard to the rights of the master. He has to be extremely solicitous of the needs of the Eved. He's not allowed to make him do, it's called farach, what the Jews had to do in the Torah, right? Avodas farach, another it's called like oppressive. You can't make him do hard labor, or you can't make him do unnecessary labor. Just because, let's say there's nothing to do. You can't make him do things just so that he shouldn't sit around idle. So you can't humiliate him in any way. In fact, the halacha is, it's brought down, if there's only one pillow, who gets to sleep on it? Turns out that the Eved sleeps on it. Because if the master would be sleeping on it, they'd be mistreating the Eved. So the only way to do it is if the Eved sleeps on it. So the Chazal said, whoever is Kona in Eved Ivri, it's like he's Kona a master for himself. To indicate the extent to which the Torah was so concerned about the rights and the feelings of the Eved, it went so far as to say it's like you have a master, really, because you can't violate the halacha. Okay. Now, Kisikna Eved Ivri, Sheshanim Yavod. Rashi says that in this particular place, he deduces it from the sources, that it's talking about someone who was sold by Bezin because he stole and he couldn't pay back. Sheshanim Yavod, he works for 6 years, and on the seventh he goes out free. So it's a 6 year term. He can also go out through what's called Giron Kesef. In other words, he can pay off, he's assessed. Let's say he was sold for 6 years for $600. So each year is $100. So he worked 3 years, he could pay off for $300 and go free and achieve his freedom that way too. It's called Giron Kesef. In Begapo Yevo Begapo Yete, if he came alone, he goes out alone. What does it mean, if he came alone, he goes out alone? Unmarried, Rashi says. Alright? So what does it come to teach us? Rashi, Begapo Yete, Magich im lo hoye noso yi mitchilo, ein rabo mosolo shifra kinanis, laholud mimena avodim. It comes to teach us that if this heter, to have a shifcha k'nanis, is only if he's already married to a Jewish woman. But if he came in an unmarried state, then he is not, the master cannot give him a shifcha. In Bali Shahu, if he's married, a married man, v'yotza ishto imo, then his wife goes out with him. Interesting how the Torah expresses things. What do you mean the wife goes out with him? Interesting, just the way the Torah chooses to express certain things. What do you mean the wife goes out with him? What's the kasha? What's the, if she's not, how did she go in? In other words, the wife didn't become, only he was sold as a slave. I mean, if a man steals and can't pay back, it's not, you don't sell the wife as a slave. So what does it mean that the wife goes out with him? Rashi, anybody? You're not familiar with this parsha. Uh-huh. Sedge of the week. So it means simply like this, that the master becomes obligated to support the wife and children. While he's in Eved Ivri, he has to provide food for them. So the yotza ishto imo means that the obligation of the master ceases. Take a look at Rashi. The yotza ishto imo, the chimihich nisa shetete, who brought her in, that she should go out. Go out from what? Elam magid akasev, but the Torah tells you shakona eved ivri chayev mzonos ishto vanav, that one who purchases an eved ivri now becomes chayev in the food of his wife and children. So the yotza means that what? that the obligation ceases. She goes out with him, meaning to say he no longer has to support them with food. Of course, I'm not going to pursue that the kasha automatically occurs. What's the kasha that automatically has to come to mind? Frankie? The whole chiyuv of supporting the wife was because he was utilizing the evidence. He was working for him. To imagine that this would be a lifetime chiyuv would be very difficult. So, of course, in other words, this obligation should coexist with the period of time which is a slave. Okay, kash the curse. If Madonna vidin loisha, if his master shall give him a wife, it's been that Rashi does as shivul kananus. The yod lovanu movanos, and she bears him sons or daughters. Veisha viladeha, the woman and her children tia ladoneha, shall belong to her master. Hu yete begafal, he goes out alone. Okay, so that's no problem because they're not really his children, and that's a benefit for the master. In other words, it's there's benefits on both sides. One of the benefits of the master is that he can increase his stock, so to speak, of avadim. Okay. Now, here's where we get to the interesting part. The amar yomar eved, and if the servant shall say, Ahavti es Adoni, I love my master, as Ishti v'as Bonai, my wife, my children, lo eisei chavshi. I don't want to go free. Interesting. So, by the way, the very fact that you can have such a pasuk, what does it teach you about the institution? It couldn't have been that bad. I mean, right. It presupposes, if the Torah has to construct a contingency situation, then you might like it. It can't be that all that bad. And throwing the fact, what could be so bad? Yeah? Sure, all his needs taken care of, his wife doesn't have to worry about his wife and kids, right? And what work he's doing, what we don't know, but he can't be doing backbreaking labor. He's not allowed to, so it's not so schlacht. So he wants to stay with this.
The other side also, the person said he can't be doing backbreaking labor,
which you see that the institution of Eved Ivri is not something which is demeaning. If it was that demeaning, your Torah wouldn't have to have a whole parsha about a nut. It wouldn't be a nut that would want to stay there. So what do? V'gishu Adonav Elohim. Here it's not God. It's referring to the court. And the master must bring him to the bezin. V'gishu Eladelas. Olav HaMezuzah. And they bring him to the door, the doorpost. V'rata Adonav Es Ozno B'Marteya V'Avado Li'Ola. And then his master shall pierce his ear with an awl. And it goes through the ear into the doorpost. And there's a significance because it's opposite the mezuzah. Rashi points out the significance. Va'avado li'olam, and he works li'olam. What li'olam means? It doesn't mean forever, literally, but it means until yovel. Okay? And then Rashi explains that. Va'avado li'olam ad yovel. Okay? By the way, if there's one seder you really want to work on in terms of tremendous amount of bekiyus in halacha, in other words, just to get the basics, it's Mishpatim. If you do Mishpatim with all the Rashis, do it well, it's got a real first and dine mominus, tremendous amount. You can learn a tremendous amount. So it's good for that overview. One second. This is all. So Rashi shows why this means Yovel. Yovel is the 50th, there's the Shemitah cycle, right? So every seventh Shemitah cycle, that's the 49 years, so the 50th year is Yovel. On Yovel, all the Avadim go free. So Avad Yovel means he works until Yovel, no matter whenever it comes. It could come the following year, it could come 40 years from now, but that's the cutoff point, at which point he automatically goes free. Now, just on the basis of these last few psukim, what would you say are the questions? Pick the year? Why do they pick it? Before you ask that question, you should ask a more basic question. Yeah, what's the idea of piercing? What's this whole purpose? Now, once you... Then Robert is correct. First question is, what's the big problem? Why doesn't he just stay? What does he have to... Why does he have to go through this thing? What's wrong? Yeah, what's this idea of being branded? Exactly. Then, of course, once you... establish that there is a reason for that, then the question is why the year, why the doorpost, that type of phenomenon, right? Okay, that's one question. Any other questions?
Why
What's such a punishment? Just brain
slavery. No,
well, slavery by one thing. You see, you have to understand one thing, that these rules apply in both cases. I have to caution you on that. These rules, Rashi will explain, the idea of staying after 6 years and having your ear pierced applies not just when he stole, but even if he became a slave, not through stealing, because he sold himself out of poverty. And after 6 years, he goes free. It's the same rules. The halakhas are the same, basically. If he sold himself out of poverty after 6 years, he wants to stay, then he has to go through the same thing. You see? So therefore, the answer that you give for the reasoning of the piercing has to include both cases. Of course, it operates in both cases. Okay? Now, what do you want to say, Ed? Why would anybody want to do it if it's supposed to be a punishment? I mean, just asking why. Well, he explains the reason. I have to ask Adoni. Look, why would anybody want to do it? I don't know if it's, is that really good kasha? I mean, it's not such a strong kasha because, yeah, in other words, it turns out that many things which may appear to be a punishment, a person can adjust to, can find it. The truth is that even in prison, especially in America today with a lot of these cushy prisons, a person can have a better life than he ever had before on the outside. A lot of people are much better off in prison. Because in prison, see what, they couldn't stand, they were too wild. But a lot of youngsters are today, when you're out of jail, so they're too wild, there are too much temptation, so they can't control their instincts. They live crazy lives. But once in jail, let's say you were in a jail where there was a decent warden, whatever it is, and you were forced. Now you're forced. Your freedom was taken away, and you found out that they gave you a job to do, and they gave you some training, and then they showed you a library. And slowly but surely, you change around. You have a very productive life. You're much happier. You live what you do, exercise. You know, you eat better. You're not doing, and you're a little productive, and you're creative, and yeah, you like the whole environment. And a guy might say at the end of the term, he'll say, what do I want to go out there? It's a crazy, now I see how crazy I was and what a crazy world it is. And I'm more productive. I'd rather stay like this. No, there aren't that many people like that because you don't find that many rational people. But the truth is that for many people, it would be more rational to stay in that state. Now, here it's not that hard to understand. Since I've told you, Ed, since we've said that the institution is... No, I don't mean to berate you when I say that. I mean to say that... question's okay, nothing wrong with asking the question. But since the institution is an enlightened one, it's an enlightened institution and a good master, and he likes the wife and the children, one can understand why he says, I'm better off this way. Well, what's so terrible about it? Good. In other words, you see, so Pacey's saying, if it's not such a bad thing, so why do you need a special matir? Moreover, if it's not such a bad thing, so why? What about this thing about the piercing of the ear? The piercing of the ear clearly implies, we'll soon see what the reasons are, clearly implies that he's doing something wrong. I mean, I'll go to the Rashi. Rashi explains. But it's definitely a rebuke to the person, as we'll soon see. But of course, the question. But see, every step leads to another question. Because the manushach, if it's really the Torah is against it, as we'll soon see, and that's why the ear is pierced. So the ear should have been pierced at the very beginning. I mean, why? What has he done now? In other words, like you see, if manushach. I mean, if either the institution, the Torah established the institution. I mean, either it's a good thing or a bad thing. If it's a bad thing, the Torah should have established it. If it's okay, so then what's wrong? Let it be for more than 6 years. That's the first question. And if it's something which requires a special thing over here, whatever reason you're going to say, that he has to have the ear pierced, so then it should have been pierced right away. Yeah. Why is he being pierced? Well, it's being pierced because he loves his wife. I mean, that's what it would seem. At the very beginning, his ear is not pierced. But later on, when he's had a taste of his life, and he says, I love my master, my wife, and I want to go free, then he gets his ear pierced. I mean, like it's... everything is difficult over here. Okay.
If a guy who sells himself into, he never did, a father,
Right.
So now when he comes out after the end of the period of time, how's he better off?
How's he better off?
Yeah, how's he better off? But sometimes when river, if he came by himself, he goes out by himself. Sometimes he made while he was in heaven.
You mean, how
the
will
it... The guy's in a state of poverty. He's the only one who will be able to survive. Nothing
coming out. Yes, things may have changed. In other words, that was 6 years ago. During the course of 6 years. And now he's starving. No.
Right.
Now he's there, has money.
Yeah.
He's got $600, whatever the amount is. He put in the bank. Okay, he's got money. He's got money. Also, don't forget, it's a 6 year breathing period. He could have taken home courses and whatever it is, locksmithing, whatever it may be. He sold, yes. He sold, you purchase him.
Oh, by the price.
In the case when he sold, because of the robbery, he doesn't see that money because it pays off the debt. Yeah. But in this case, he'd get the money, he has some money. Meanwhile, he's got a 6 year grace period in which he can learn a trade. So, and when the situation could change, now it could be a different economy. Okay. So, those are the basic questions, though, as I said, right? I mean, a lot of Mamanoshach things, either or. If it's no good, don't allow it. If it is good, so what's why only 6 years? And if you need the piercing, so let the piercing be done right away. I mean, it seems that the crime is that he loved his wife. I mean, and if the crime is he loves his wife and his master, I mean, what's the crime? So why'd you let him have this? You know, it's mutter to give him his wife and his children. It's only natural, even though they're not really his children, but I mean, it's not just, it's only natural. It's only normal to have an emotional attachment. Biologically, psychologically, you're going to feel a kinship with these children, even though how luckily they're not yours. Got it? All clear now? Okay.
It's referring to the children being the children of the Kippah?
I'm sorry, yes, of course.
And the wife not being the...
No, it's not referring to his other children at home. Why would that be relevant? In other words, I don't want to go out because then I'll be away from my wife and children. So he's not referring to the Jewish wife.
I don't want to go out.
Don't tempt me. Let's just leave it at that.
Might be true.
Don't tempt me now.
I'm on tape.
I can't bear to watch myself.
Why is it saying, yes.
Yes, we're going to take that up right now. So Rashi teaches us. Let's do the Rashi. Rashi on I believe it's on Pasuk Vav, but it's not the first, it's in the middle there. It's the Rashi in the middle of the Verotza, because Rashi goes into a lot of factors over here, the right one, you know, the right ear. I really recommend, by the way, if you're going to pick out one Sedra, so you should do Sedra of the week, but one to study intensely to give you a real broad overview, I think Mishpatim probably the best. Tremendous overview, because it's in brief, especially in areas of crime, civil cases, monetary cases, killing, rape, all that kind of thing. You have a very broad overview, I believe. Make sure you do all the Rashis, and if you can do the Rambans as well, be excellent. You gain a great deal. Now, in the middle of that Rashi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, you have it? Amar Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai. I'm sorry, right before that. Umarra Ozen Lirota. Why did God see, in other words, to choose the ear to be pierced, Mikol Sha'ari Varm Shabaguf, more than any other organ of the body? Am Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, said Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, Ozen Zos, this ear, Shasham al Har Sinai, Lo Signov, it heard on Har Sinai, Lo Signov, Vahalach Vaganav, and it went and it stole Terata. I'm sure you've heard this before, right? The ear which heard on Sinai, thou shalt not steal, and he went and stole. Now, of course, this itself raises a tremendously powerful question. This is the kind of thing, a tremendously powerful question that you can't sit when you hear this kind of explanation.
The guy who heard did not steal?
Well, the ear which heard on Sinai, I mean, no.
What if he's not one of the guys who didn't steal?
Well, what's that? That's the next point. Okay, right, when he comes there. But there's even better kasha. Ah, see? That's the kasha. So you plant seeds, Ed. You never know when it's going to come out, when it's going to sprout. Nobody knows. Where the real Chachma will come. You don't know. Everybody has talent over here. Everybody. No one should look at himself like, oh, I'm a weak guy. He's strong. That's not true. You don't know. You just got to subject yourself to the process and keep learning, and it will come out. Look, whatever. No, we're not playing comparative games anyway, aside from that. But just in general, sometimes people feel down. That's the kasha. If that's the case, every Avera was from Sinai. Every Avera is from Sinai. So every time a person does an Avera, this should be the standard procedure. His ear should be pierced. And the ear which heard, you shouldn't eat treif. Right? Or the ear which heard, you shouldn't violate Shabbat. Whatever it is, I mean, there's enough. 613. You may need a few. You won't have any. Can you imagine a person with no spaces left in his ear? Right? Pick up, that's a good kasha. But I'm not going to really deal with that today. I'm wondering, though, if after we explicate the area, we'll be able to deal with that. Via mocher atzmo, and if he sold himself, then it's ozen shoshom al har Sinai. In other words, Rashi now has to give you, because this process occurs even in a case where he sold himself. So what would the reason be over there? What's there? There's no violation. There's no issue in the Torah to sell yourself as an Eved Ivri. So why is it, what did he do wrong? So then, it is a ozen shasham al har Sinai, the ear which heard on har Sinai, he leave b'nei Yisrael avadim. For unto me are b'nei Yisrael avadim. V'holach v'kana adam liyatmo, he went and he got himself his own master, teirata. Then it says, Reb Shimon ha'idorish mikra zekim in Chomer. And Reb Shimon would give a drasha, would explain this pasuk, you know, like a beautiful charm. And he explained it thus. He takes up the issue of why the doorpost, why over there, why not any other vast or any other appliance, why those particular things. Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, God said, Delosu Mezuzah Shayu Edim the Mitzrayim, the door and the doorpost which were witnesses in Mitzrayim, Kshapasachti Ala Mashkov Yashtei Mezuzos, when I skipped over the door, the doors. The Amarti, and I said, Ki li b'nei Yisrael avadim, for unto me are b'nei Yisrael avadim, avadayhem, they are my servants, for lo avadim, lavadim. They are my servants, but they are not servants to servants. V'olach zev v'kana adon liatmo. And he went and he acquired a master for himself. Yeirata b'fneihem. Let him be pierced in front of them. So he ties in the idea of the doorpost with the second reason. With the second reason. And that is the same idea, that a mocher atzmo, his ear must be pierced too, even though it's interesting, even though he didn't violate a crime. Because there is no issa to sell yourself as an there is an issa to steal, obviously, we know, but in the second case, he didn't do an issa. So it doesn't matter, in other words. Perfection and imperfection do not only entail, you know, doing yisurim or avoiding them. But that strengthens our case. That strengthens the kasha. Because here, the reason is not associated with the I love my master, with the ahavti, the way it is in the pasuk. It goes against it. It's associated with the original crime, whether it be stealing or whether it be selling himself. Right? Because where he sold himself, he's being pierced because he's in violation of ki li b'nei Yisrael avadim. So if that's the case, it should be right away. You see? That strengthens our kasha. But what's the real problem with this? The first one makes sense. In other words, if he stole, so the ear is pierced because it heard, thou shalt not steal. That makes sense. Of course the kasha is, why not right away? Of course the kasha is, like Ed says, why not every any other thing? But at least, all right, we don't know why other sins don't call for this, but the reason is it makes sense. It covers the ground. What's difficult about the second one? I don't mean extraneously, but I mean intraneously. What's difficult with that? The other problems were in the second reason, the guy who sold himself, Kili b'nei Yisrael avadim. Avadim heim v'lo avadim avadim. What's wrong with that svara? How so? Yeah. That's the big kasha. That's the main kasha. As I see it. In other words, I think the major kasha, the knockout punch, is that it doesn't seem to make sense. There's no contradiction. Because we made it clear that the master cannot interfere with the... What does it mean to be an Eved Hashem? Follow God's Torah. Now, an Eved Ivri is obliged in every respect to follow the Torah. Oh, forget, he has a heter for a shift. That's a heter, so he's not outside the Torah. But other than that, can the master tell him to work on Shabbos? He can't even tell his Eved Kanani to work on Shabbos. Can he tell him not to do... Can he stop him from living in a sukkah? Can he tell him not to do tefillin and so on and so on? Impossible. So, while he's an Eved Ivri, he has to engage in all the mitzvot. He's not part of the mitzvot. He's Talmud Torah and this and that. He has to work. So, in other words, it's in two different senses. Where's the conflict? The Torah is saying there's a conflict. You can only be my slave, but you can't be a slave to a slave. That would be true if there was a conflict over here between the two loyalties. But it's not the case. It's two separate loyalties. One is a contractual monetary responsibility to this individual. The other is to God as a follower of the Torah. And the two go hand in hand. That's the kasha. That's the main kasha of Ashir. Why not? I'm sorry? If acquiring a Jewish wife, he can even cottage a woman, why the master can't stop him from doing that? The other question would be, is he obligated? Then the kasha would be, does he have to support a new wife that's acquired? I don't remember the area. I think it's only the wife that he had at the time. I don't know if he acquires a new wife. I don't know if the master is obligated to. That would make sense. In other words, you know, responsibilities. I said at the time he acquires them. All right, but in general, the kasha is very strong. How does one conflict with the other? This is a good kasha. For Ed, good kasha, huh? That was Pacey's guy. These two guys make a good team. Two heavy hitters here. I have to present. One answer, Roy Chase, he enunciated one. Roy Chase is more philosophical. Mine is the more practical resolution. That's all I could say. What would you wear? But I want you to search for it. Where would you say is the problem over here? The thing is that it's a breach in your relationship with God. And how is it a breach in your relationship with God when the institution is designed so that it can't interfere with your relationship with God? That's the kasha. In other words, made it very clear, the master cannot stop him from keeping the Torah.
Yeah, the master
Okay.
Yeah, it's very impersonal to the sight of where his sustenance is coming from. Because whenever he needs something, he just goes to his master.
That's good, that's good.
Yeah, but it's I can see how it's a
Okay, that's good. Get on the right track. But you got to carry one step further. He's saying that there's such a thing as a slave mentality. In other words, the breach is not in the practical. In other words, the breach is not in the practical arrangement, the way it's worked out. But the breach is that in order to be an Eved Hashem, you've got to have a certain mentality. Eved Hashem doesn't just mean a person that keeps the Torah. See? There's a certain relationship that you have to have with God. The Torah is supposed to direct you to that. And one who's in the situation of being an Eved does not have that mentality. Now, there's a Gemara that backs that up. Take a look at the... Well, you don't have to... I have it here. The Gemara is on Yud Dalet and Brachos. Amar Aleph. Amar Rav. Kol Anosein Shalom L'Chaver Kodem Shiyispalel. Whoever greets his friend, in other words, he goes to his friend's house to greet him, It doesn't mean accidentally so in the street, but it means bedaka. He goes over to visit his friend before tefillah. Ki'ilu aso bama. It's like he built an altar to idol. Bama is what they for idolatrous purposes. Why? Shenemar chidlu lachem in adam, because the pasuk says, "Stay away from man." Ashed nisham biapo, whose soul, in other words, whose life is in his nostrils. In other words, he's vulnerable. He's a weak creature. He can die. Ki bamen nechshafu. Because what is he worth? Stay away from man. So it says ki bamen nechshafu. Because very often they use this mechanism of a play on words. Al tikre bameh, don't read bameh, ela bama, but rather say bama. This is in the second paragraph. In other words, the real word is bameh, but the Chazal wanted to indicate to you the real idea of the pasuk is bama. What does it mean? How do you explain? I mean, it's a very strange idea. No other religion in the world. See, there are certain indicators that show you the unique nature of Judaism. It's got to be divine. There's no other system in the world that would have a statement like this. I mean, a person would say, you shouldn't go. Yeah, I can understand the average from guy would say it's wrong. It's disrespectful to God. Right? Or the average religionist. Even in a different religion, even in Christianity or Islam, I could see the clergy, where I don't know what the rules are, but I could see them saying that you should not stop and visit your friends before you go to church or whatever it is. I can see them saying it. But the reason would be is because you should do your to God first. That's disrespectful or whatever it is, you know. But that's not what the Chazal is not saying that, rather. They're saying that's idolatry. Now, where's the idolatry? The guy's going to shul, he's going to daven, he's just going to stop off and see his friend first. Why is that idolatry? Why is he making him into a bummer? Yep, that's right. See, because the real, what's the real essence of idolatry? It means, idolatry really means, and the attachment. It means an emotional attachment to certain objects which exist in the imagination as source of security. That's really the what idols, they bow down, they set up these idols, they projected. The early idolaters, they projected, they created these entities in order to achieve a certain psychological support, security. Now, the way it works is, the greatest avodah zarah of all is really man. Because a person is searching for security in life. The motivation of idolatry is the need for security. It happens to be that that's the greatest motivation, by the way, of religion in general, or even in Judaism. What motivates people to become religious is the insecurity. If people were totally secure, then you see the shuls would be starving. Shuls, if people were told, if there was no cancer and accidents and all kinds of problems, if people felt totally secure, I assure you that you wouldn't be able to get a minyan on Shabbos in 99% of the shuls. Now, I know people would disagree with this, and if I was quoted as saying this, I might come in for some flack. But I don't mind, because I think it's a very defensible position. Because you see, that amongst Orthodox people, what is the greatest problem? If somebody in their circle gets ill, right, or any untimely thing happens to a person, what do they say? And he was such a firm guy. He was such a good person. He always went to shul. He was someone to talk to him, right? That is a tremendous, tremendous problem. Now, why is it such a tremendous problem? Yes, because it's a breach, it's a bother. In other words, in a sense, to put it bluntly, there is a certain insurance policy over here. Am I right? But if people, in other words, you see, the more secure a person feels, that's true, I mean, for nations as well. That's what God says in the Torah when you lend Moshe to Moshe, told the Jews, when you enter the land, right? Enter the land and you'll become Venoshantem Baritz, you'll become secure, right? And you'll grow and you'll prosper and you'll rebel against God and you don't need God anymore. In the wilderness, it's one situation. And when a person is going, when does a person discover religion? A person is young and he's strong and he's building and he's successful and everything he's taking on, God, he doesn't think about God too much. He doesn't need God. Then he has a heart attack and he's suffering and this and that. All of a sudden he discovers religion. So the thing is that the greatest avodah zarah, the real drive, that need for security is usually directed towards people. The biggest avodah zarah is really man. The biggest avodah zarah. That's why all these tefillos on Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah, and during that, al tiftchu b'nedivim, right? Do not place your faith. In other words, the biggest draw is for people to put their faith in other people. That's the real avodah zarah. Because they sense, it really stems from childhood. It's something, it's an immaturity, it's an infantile phenomenon which lives on. Because we all went through a period of childhood, and in childhood we were, in reality, totally dependent. And our complete sense of security came from our relationship with other people who we perceive to have all the power. The thing is, though, that as a person grows up, so to speak, and he develops, this remains a very powerful idea in the unconscious. And of course, you know, it usually transfers. He finds new objects because he realizes that the parents are not, they can't play that role, whatever it is. He begins to see his parents realistically, and he goes on to seek a replacement. But that need, in other words, he's always searching to return to that infantile state in which he was able to feel that absolute sense of security via his dependence upon human images. By the way, all these idols also are in human images. They're always symbolically, in the unconscious, they represent certain images and basically parental figures. You see? I just wanted to finish the point, though. That is really, so the person who's going to visit his friend, so what does it show you? In other words, as soon as he gets up in the morning, the writer, you know, he's back to his everyday concern. And what's his main concern is his security. See? So, of course, he's going to daven. That's important. But where he goes first, that shows you where. In other words, he really stops. He makes the point to visit. He's got to win over that friend. He has to have him on his side. I'm assuming it's an important person in his life. I mean, it doesn't mean a trivial. It's not going to stop for a trivial person. The wealthy guy. He wants to see the wealthy guy. You see this all the time. There's no question about it. I mean, you see the difference that people accord a wealthy person. I mean, everybody, let's face it, an ordinary person walks in, this and that, he gets a certain amount of, the average. A wealthy person walks in, 20 people jump, get him a seat, this and that. Comes, why? Why is everybody doing all of this? They want to curry favor. They sense that if they can... It's not just, by the way, it is not just, don't say it's because practically speaking it may be a good thing to get some money. It's an emotional thing. In other words, if a wealthy person befriends them, or they feel they have a relationship with a wealthy person, they feel security. Even if it's not going to materialize in specific dollars, but they feel secure because they think he's the one. He has it. So that is a dependent mentality. Now, to the extent that a person places... You see, he satisfies that need for security in infantile mechanisms that he can't have a true relationship to God. Because the true relationship to God demands philosophical maturity. Philosophical maturity is where he uproots that. He recognizes that it's complete nonsense. And that he lives in a world, he has to accept the fact that he lives in a world of reality, and the only reality is God. God placed him in this world, right? And the only security that he has is to be in line with the system which God created. I mean, it's God created him, which operates according to the laws of nature. You see? That's what it says, that a person... there's a pasuk from Tehillim over there. I don't remember the exact quote. To cast, Yehovah, it says, Yehovah, he should cast his whole thing on God. And I'll take care. In other words, which means to say, not in a crazy way, that you wait for miracles, but that you're fearless in the sense that you're willing to take on the world of reality. And live in the framework of reality, which is set up by God. And in that framework, whatever happens to you, happens. You don't have this need for this built-in protection. And moreover, in doing so, you're distorting reality. Because you're attributing this power to created beings. That's idolatry. That's why all the tefillos on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, always Melech Elyon, Melech Evyon, right? Melech Evyon, it talks about the earthly earthly king is weak and decays and immoral. It's trying to take you out of that. Don't turn to this. But the only security is the Creator. And if you can't accept that, then you have you can't have a true relationship with God. So that's the concept. What's the problem, Yossi? This is the highest level. He went and he achieved he established a master for himself, so therefore he'll never achieve. His philosophical maturity has been impeded. He'll never achieve that relationship to God because he's like a child. He's like a child who can't face reality. He's always dependent upon the father. Case. I mean, the Torah itself seems to have an ambivalent attitude towards the institution. I mean, if it's not a good thing, so it should be abolished, shouldn't have it. And if it is a good thing, so then why should he there be pierced? I mean, it seems to be like, a little ambivalent over here. And as I said, it seems to contradict the flow of the psukim, because it says, if he shall say, I like my master, I like my wife, lo etei chavshi, then v'ratza. Then he gets pierced. So, why is that? I mean, it's an offshoot. It's a continuation of the original question. Why isn't it pierced right away? And it's not pierced right away. Well, why is it pierced? It's pierced because he happens to like the situation. It doesn't seem to be anymore. In point of fact, when he is getting pierced, it no longer seems to be that closely related to the original cause. The original cause was that he adopted and went and adopted a master for himself, right? At that point, he doesn't get pierced. Later on, what happened was he enjoys this, he likes the situation. He likes his wife, he was given a wife, he was given a child, and he acquired a child, he has a wife, he's a child, and he likes the situation. He's staying. Doesn't seem to be any, at the point where the air is being pierced, it no longer seems to be so closely related to the underlying reason why it's being pierced. It's a little strange the way it's been worked out. Okay? Anybody trying to can't answer the question? And the reason why the ear was chosen was because the ear which heard. In other words, the ear symbolizes the that part of him which receives knowledge. So you see that he's defective in terms of his completion, in terms of he didn't develop along the lines of knowledge. In other words, he's immature. Immature, dependent personality. So that's fine. We didn't explain it though from Lo Signo. We only explained it. We didn't explain it from Lo Signo. If it's for the avera of Lo Signo, so Ed's question was: every time a person does an avera, why this particular avera? That we didn't really. We explained it only with regard to the guy who sells himself. Avodahem. True. Yeah. So then. So then you could ask the question this way: what do I care? Why is it only when it's a person who can't repay? Anytime a person steals, he's over on Los Signo, even if he can pay. So the answer, right, Penny? He doesn't get indentured. No, he only gets indentured if he can't pay back. No, but if the point is that if he's getting pierced because he violated Los Signo, so what's the difference whether he can pay back or not? That's what you really wanted to ask? That's what the question is: if he could pay back. So then one could say, you see, that he, yeah, that's right. In other words, the reason why you don't get Malchus, for example, you don't get Malchus by an Avera, which is subject to rectification. You see? You don't get Malchus for Lo Signo, because it's subject to Piron. It's Nitzak Lase, in other words. It's Nitzak Lase, which means to say that, basically, or philosophically, you see, when you do tshuva, you can't do tshuva until you pay back. So it's restoration. In other words, when a person is correcting the defect of Lo Signo, he's reinstating himself, right? I took what doesn't belong to me, but I returned it, I restored the object to you. So he's freed himself, he's no longer in a state of violation of Lo Signo. So then I can understand that there's no need. In other words, because he recognizes the, it's clear that he recognized the evil, the defect, and he corrected it, so that there's no need for the ear to be pierced. You see? There's no need for the ear to be pierced. But that doesn't explain. All right, so the only thing is, though, if he doesn't pay back, If he doesn't pay back, it becomes a little bit problematical. Because why is the ear being pierced? I mean, he's being sold as a slave, and it'll be paid back that way. I mean, doesn't make it that. I can explain to you why if he paid back, but if he didn't pay back, so now he's an indentured slave. So if he's an indentured slave, then it must be pierced for a signal. And it's not that clear. Not that clear. All right. That's the pshat of Rabbi Chait, as I said. I worked out my own pshat based more along practical lines. And the two pshatim do not conflict. They're, you know, just different layers. I think they're both true. Could you explain it in a practical way? That the Eved Ivri cannot really fulfill his responsibilities as an Eved Hashem. Not because of the mental state. Now he does have all the mitzvahs. The only thing, no, he has all the mitzvahs. Yeah, only one petura, it's only one thing. You have a shivcha. I don't believe that's the problem. Nah. Because he's fulfilled the halacha. First of all, you're wrong. That's the halacha. He's not doing. That's the halacha. That in this state it's mutter. So you mean a soldier also, when he goes off to war, is putter from certain things. I mean, it doesn't. That's not the point. In this situation, he's not prevented from doing mitzvah. So he's mutter b'shivcha. So he's mutter b'shivcha. So it's that halachli mutter. So he's not violating God's will. He's not violating God's will. You see, it's only if he already has a wife, you see, so it's all logic thing. No, I don't believe it's like that. See, I want to say like this, that there is a practicality involved. That, you see, that the Rambam says, well, the Gemara says, I say Torah keva umalotcha roi, that a person should make his Torah keva, and what's keva? Mm-hmm. Keva should be the main thing, the essential. Keva means permanent, right? And the malacha is aroi. Aroi means that's secondary. What does that mean? Right? That means that that a person has to organize. If a person wants to be an Eved Hashem, right? That means that the whole purpose of his physical existence is to serve God, right? Now, if a person wants to be an Eved Hashem, so he has to organize his life in a certain way. Because the thing is like this, that, see, there are two. I would say like this, there are two forces that must be overcome, that enslave a person. To be an Eved Hashem means to be in line with your own purpose. But there are, a man has Bechira. There are things, however, that enslave a person. So a person has to free himself from potential enslavements. Now what are the two potential enslavements that a person faces, categorically speaking? One is from the internal, the instinctual. In other words, what we call the what we refer to as the tivus. If a person is not a master in his own house, by his own house I'm talking about his own inner psyche, right? So of course, I mean, any emotion can enslave a person. A person can't, whatever the emotion might be, if it's a tivus for money, right? A tivus for money, or it's a tivus for a woman, or any tivus. So that person is a slave because all of his energy is involved in the satisfaction of that need. So the thing is like this. So first of all, a person has to be able to control himself so that his tivus are not overwhelming. Otherwise, he's a slave. Okay. But even if a person should be capable of doing that, there's the one battle that a person has to face is with his own self. Right, the battle to overcome his own inner drive. Even if a person should succeed in that, and he should moderate, therefore a person has to be capable of moderating his tivus, so that they're manageable and they don't overwhelm him, and they leave him with freedom. There's still one other battle. What's the other battle? Categorically speaking, what's the other battle? But what's the battle, though? Who does he have to battle to do that? What's the battle here? What's the other pitfall? The other pitfall? The physical world. Exactly. In other words, you see, because the way God designed it, we're not living in Gan Eden. In the state of Gan Eden, he didn't have this battle. In other words, God designed, as a result of the Chet of Adam, God designed it so that a person has to engage in the struggle to obtain the necessities. There's no way to avoid it. Right? You see? He has to elicit from nature those things that he needs for his survival. Ah, now the thing is like this. So how can he ever be a an Eved Hashem? It means that God designed the world. I mean, let's assume that if the world would, here you see the design of God, that it must be that God designed the world in such a way that it's possible for a person to obtain what he needs in a manner that he's not destroyed in the process. That's what we read, we say it on Rosh Hashanah, Benafsho Yavi Lachmo, right? Benafsho, at the cost of his nefesh does he acquire his bread. If a person is completely consumed with the rat race, well, that's what most people, by the way, most people's lives are totally consumed by the rat race. Now the question we have to ask is that necessity? There's no other way. If that's the case, then how can you say, I say Torah Slakeva? I mean, the Torah seems to be commanding us in something that's not possible. Now, in other words, the question, see for example, the view of the Torah, well, I mean, the Rambam explains this at length in the Mora, that the view of the Torah is that God created the world in such a way that man can achieve his purpose. In other words, that man can elicit from nature the things that he needs, right? And in a way that he still has the energy and the leisure, the time, to utilize for his true vocation, his true purpose, which is to be involved in Chachmah. Chachmah Hashem. That's his perfection. See? Now, if his constitution, in order to achieve this, two things have to be in line. If his constitution was such that he couldn't overcome it, that is to say that the instincts were more powerful than the Bechira, so that would be impossible. So therefore the essential underlying view of Yadis is that man can conquer his emotions, right? Biyata says in Bereshit, Biyata Timshol, and you'll rule over them. You see? That's in reference to the Yetzer Hara, that man has the power to rule, to overcome, and nobody could say that he can't control his instincts. Nobody could say that his instinctual nature is such that it's impossible for him to fulfill the purpose. The second thing is, though, that if a person controls his instincts, right, that the world was designed in such a way that man can obtain his needs, his basic needs, and have plenty of opportunity, time, and leisure to engage in the Chachmas Hashem. The Rambam writes about this, and it's very interesting to read it in the Mora. And he says, you see the design. He says, the reason why people complain, it's so difficult and they have such problems and all that, is because they're not pursuing what they really need. They're pursuing what they don't need, the luxuries. See? He says, and God did not design the world to provide the luxuries in an easy way. That's b'zeyas apecha toch alechem. If you need the luxuries, that requires tremendous effort and work, and then it's impossible. But if a person sees, he says, you can see it in the way that God designed the world. The things that are more, the more necessary the thing is for survival, the more accessible and easier it is. He says, air, for example, we couldn't live at all without air. No one has to, air is all around. I mean, no one has to work. It's free. Nobody has to. And then he says, as you go down the line, the more primary the need, the easier it is and the more abundant, like water. Water is more important than food. People can go for days without food, provided they had water. But water, you can't go, you get dehydrated. Water is found in greater abundance than food. And then with food, too. The more basic, I mean, fruits, vegetables, you see? The more basic, in other words, the more in line you are with basic necessity, the easier it is. And you see, it's even true of Bizman Azeh. Even in our society today, people, how much would you really need just for the basics? People spend most of their time, they kill themselves and ulcers and heart attacks and everything, and they're working day and night. It's not for necessity. I mean, it's absurd. People have tremendous houses and wardrobes, and I mean, 95% of the things that people are working for are not necessities. If a person would live, right, in accordance with the principle of necessity, so he can work a few hours a day. Work a few hours a day and get what you need, right? You can find a place in the country where it's rather, even in New York, I mean, but you get something which is, the only thing is you'd feel bad because everybody else has nicer. You wouldn't have, colored TVs and wardrobes and this and that, but that's not necessity. You don't need television to survive. You don't need, how much clothing does a person really need? How much clothing is, perfectly good clothing is thrown out all the time because it's not in fashion? You don't need that. I mean, you don't have to be in, I mean, reasonably. And you're not going to dress like in the 18th century, but let's put it this way. If a person would stick to necessity, it would be much easier. So therefore, in order for a person to be an Eved Hashem, he's got to be in a state of freedom. A state of freedom means that he's overcome the internal battle, and then he has worked out a situation vis-a-vis the external world that gives him the freedom. In other words, he obtains what he needs, and he still has the leisure. Control over his time. A person must have control over his time. A person that doesn't have control over his time is a slave. That's why, I mean, most people, that you know, people take jobs. Well, that's the whole... See, people don't have this philosophy. I mean, when you talk to a person, like, why don't you set aside time for learning, or for this, for that? My job, my parnasa. I mean, people, everybody wants you, oh, parnasa, that's it, I can't... But in reality, it's not true. I say Taras Lekeva means that a person has to build everything around Torah. That the true purpose of existence is the Torah. That's Keva. Now the question is, right, what shall I do? What profession or what job? Who should I marry? Where should I live? Everything should be around, because everything else in life is a means. In other words, getting a job and obtaining sustenance and all this is not an end in itself. I mean, no one's going to claim that the job, having a job, is going to create happiness in and of itself, right? I mean, it's crazy, people themselves recognize this, that the only reason why they're working is for a means, right? But the work itself precludes them ever achieving, there's no ends. Where's the end? So the end is a fantasy. I have certain fantasies, you know, an imagination, but in reality, it's never going to happen. I'm just saying, you know, you can imagine, in other words, let's say a person was able to achieve, control over his instincts, and he didn't need much. But let's say he lived in a place, let's say the way the world was designed, it would take like 20 hours of work just to get enough food for one day. Right? That's absolutely absurd. It's just the opposite. In New York, you can get a job. I mean, you can work 2-3 hours a day and get by. It's smart. There's plenty of the opportunities that are endless. Just the opposite. A person can have a... I don't think that's the case at all. Now, I'm saying, like, you see, like, let's say a person lives in certain primitive places. He lives in certain primitive... Let's say the world was designed that way. That the person had very little needs, but just to get those needs, he'd have to work 20 hours a day. So that person could never... So then you'd have to say that there's a defect in the creation, because it would be impossible. This creature was designed to be involved in Chachma, right? But the world that he lives in, right, was set up in such a way that it's totally impossible. Then you'd have a... Then you'd have a defect, but that's not the case. So therefore, what's the avodaihein below avodim la avodim? In other words, the Eved Ivri has given up his freedom, because each person has to work out a situation which is conducive to his own need. He doesn't have control over his time. It may very well be that the master can't oppress him, and he can't degrade him and all of that, but he's at the whim of somebody else. And that's an impossibility, because each person has his own potential. If you want to be, in other words, if you want to be an Eved Hashem, that means you have to function at your best. That means you have to have control. Each person is very individualistic in this respect. You have to have that freedom, that control over your time. If it's better for you to learn in the morning, if it's better to learn in the afternoon or the evening or whatever it is, that's your calling. By putting yourself in this situation, you put yourself at the whim of somebody else. If you're at the whim of somebody else, so you're not in control of your time. You've given up control over your time. Now that's the that's why it's avodai hain. You're no longer a servant of Hashem. You're basically a servant to somebody else. You see, you've removed yourself from that situation in which is you have the preconditions for a state of freedom. That's the chat that I wanted to get. Okay, any questions on that? Both are true. In other words, as I said, I don't see any. There's no conflict. I think both are true. Rabbi Chait explained it from the basic mentality of the Eved, which is true, and I explained it from the situation, which I think is also true. Okay. The thing is like this. That situation is one in which he's given up his freedom. He's given up his freedom. Now, you could have that in other situations too, right? I mean, a guy can take on jobs or open businesses where he doesn't have any freedom. But that's not an institution, you see? That's something else. And philosophically, it would be the same thing. You follow what I'm saying? Yeah, philosophically. But halachically, this is an institution which its very nature is one in which he gives up his freedom. Because he does not have control over his time. And a person cannot really fulfill his purpose unless he has control over his time. You okay? It's one of the mitzvahs. It's one of the like Targ mitzvahs. That's why it's interesting also, you see by Talmud Torah, that there's three brachos that we say. The question whether it's two or three. Usually you only say one brachos. Last week we did Vesoro, right? Right? Ashabach Abano, right? And then you have Vaharevna, which is a tefillah, basically. Vaharevna. Anyway, a lot of brachos over here. So, what's going on? I would say that Talmud Torah is in two frameworks. One is what? It's a mitzvah like any other. The chiyuv mitzvah. It's a ma'isa mitzvah. So therefore, the minimal, that's what the Rambam talks about it. The minimal is, to fulfill the mitzvah, you have to set aside a time for learning by day and by night. And if you did that, you're yotzei. That's yotzei yedei chavoso. But Talmud Torah, in terms of perfection, you see, that's why ashabach abanu, mikol ha'amim, which means to say that you have to give a special shevach to God. One is lasak with divrei Torah. One is a bracha on the mitzvah, like any other mitzvah. Ashabach abanu is a bracha of shevach. You don't say ashabach abanu by any other mitzvah, right? Ashabach abanu is a special shevach, right, to God, right, for the fact that he distinguished us through Torah. Because Torah is the means of perfection of any other Talmud Torah, Shachar, Keneged, Tulum. In other words, of all the mitzvahs, the one which is most directly related, all the other mitzvahs are supposed to bring you to the proper activity. Talmud Torah is that's the activity, you see? And then Vaharevna represents the tefillah that the person achieves the real objective of Torah. Because a person can learn Torah and still not to be perfected. Haravna is it should be sweet. That in other words, that a person should come to the realization that the involvement in Chachma is the greatest enjoyment that man can possibly have. That's Haravna. So you see that that indicates that here we're dealing with perfection itself. So that's not, you see, that's not Asei Toros Hakeva. A person that does that just sets aside a time for learning, is just fulfilling his Chiyuv Mitzvah. But that's not fulfilling Asei Toros Hakeva. Asei Toros Hakeva is perfection. Yeah? See that to be Yotzei the Mitzvah just for the system, that you were not in violation, that doesn't require much. But in terms of the Chiyuv of perfection, that's much more. Okay? This is the whole challenge of a person's life. The whole challenge of a person's life is to work out his situation in life. He has to achieve a situation that sustains his needs, but does not deprive him of the purpose. Otherwise, he's a failure. The truth, you know, what's a success and what's a failure? I mean, we talk about these terms. What society measures is totally absurd. A person that lived this way, that worked a couple of hours a day, learned the rest of the society would call him a failure. Because they have their crazy standard. But the success and failure can only be judged in terms of a purpose. Is he fulfilling his purpose? So a person that's a multimillionaire can be a tremendous failure. Because he's not achieving his purpose. He's totally involved. His whole life is involved in the acquisition of the means. To the extent that he has a tremendous abundance of the means. More means than a lemonade. It's like instead of looking at it as dollars, if a person would not look at it as dollars and look at it as objects, right? Then people say it's foolish. In other words, what has he got? This guy's a millionaire, this multimillionaire. He's got 5,000 beds, he's got 20,000 cars, he's got 10,000 houses, right? If people were to break it down that way, then they say this guy's a crackpot. He's building up things for which he has absolutely no use. You see what I'm saying? It's like a person, knew how much food he would need for the rest of his life. All right? Well, let's say a ton of whatever it is. And this guy has now, he's reached a point where he has 25,000 tons of the food. People would laugh at this guy. He's a nut. What is he working for? Now, in reality, the trick of the mind over here is that instead of that, people change it into money, and money no longer is a reality of objects, of exchange for objects, but now money becomes a fantasy of happiness. You see what I'm saying? And then the guy's people admire him. He's acquiring money. Oh, money is different. Well, money, don't look at it as money. Money is nothing. Money is only money. You can't enjoy money. You can only enjoy money when you exchange it for something. And the only thing you exchange... What's that? You can roll around in it. Yeah, but people don't look at you as being crazy. If they would look at money, you just cannot enjoy money unless you're, that's a crazy, I mean, the stomach guy. There are people like that. They can't spend it. That the enjoyment is that they have it. But that's a crazy kind of an enjoyment. Because it's a fantasy that I can have whatever I want. You see? But then he's only a fantasy. Because the moment he begins to spend it, he's in pain because he no longer has a fantasy of having whatever he wants. He's in a complete conflict. So that's not really a happy state. Yes? Question? Who said they wanted it?
And he said that when somebody, say he learns an hourly thing,
if a person just is Mekayim the mitzvah, he puts aside a certain time, whatever it is, 15 minutes, 20 minutes a day, right? Just he wants to fulfill the mitzvah. By day and by night, that's the chiyuv. To set aside a time by day, and to set aside a time by night, it doesn't matter how long it is, you fulfilled your chiyuv.
It doesn't matter to somebody by just doing that?
No, violating, he's keeping the system. Just the opposite. He's keeping the system. But he's not fulfilling the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, Bishlei Musa. In other words, there's more to the mitzvah of Talmud Torah than just that. In other words, a person just picks up his lulav and puts it down, that's it. There's nothing more to do. You don't go around and you're shaking it the whole day. Right? A person leaves his kazayis matah, that's it. There's nothing more to do. But in Talmud Torah is more than just a maisa mitzvah.
Right. So
no. You're wrong. It is a Maisa HaMitzvah. That itself is a Maisa HaMitzvah. It carries with it a certain perfection of the Gavra. Just like he picked up the lulav and so forth. You see? So you can't say he did nothing. And the Torah commands you to do this act of Talmud Torah. And if you do so, you're in good standing with the system. You're keeping the system of Judaism. But I want level. Talmud Torah, right, is more than that. It's much more than just a Maisa HaMitzvah. It's a whole way of life. It's a whole involvement of perfection. I mean, that he's not doing. What's the problem? You want to say that he's not doing anything? You want to argue that way? No, he's doing the mitzvah.
It's like some people say someone who does, whatever.
That would be you're right. But that would be, the point would be, at what minimal? There's a minimal level at which he's yotzei the mitzvah, technically speaking. Like the Rambam says, if he understood the first bracha, right? If he had kavanah in the first bracha, so he's yotzei the mitzvah. Even though, of course, it's the lowest level, right? So that you understand, there's different levels, right?
This guy
that just had kavanah for the first bracha, and the rest he just said, on the lowest level, really didn't understand the words, but he did at least have kavanah that he was addressing it to God. That you have to have. So can you say that he's in line with, he fulfilled the system, in other words. He fulfilled his obligation in the system. That's it. He's not chayav to daven again. Understand it? Does that, well, that's a question. I mean, at what level? If a guy's just reading Chumash, right? That's already considered a Talmud Torah, right? He's reading Mikra, he's reading Chumash. Yeah, but he is learning Torah. There is learning. That's part of learning, but it's on a low level, obviously. Right. Question. Okay? Now, let's take up the question, according to both Peshatim over here, why is it only after the 6 years are up that we pierce the year? Why is it? It's because he said a hafti as Zishti, as Adoni, right? Banai, Loete Chavshi. Why is he being, so why then? Why not right away? And in fact, we said later on, it's not so terrible, later on it's understandable, he became accustomed to the family, he likes them, it's not such a terrible thing anymore. So I think I hear what you're saying, Penny. Go ahead. In other words, it is true, you see, that this person is suffering from a dependent mentality, an infantile mentality. Right? But the question is, what's the alternative? In other words, this state is not the ideal state, right? But the Torah had no choice, because since he's in that, given that he did not achieve maturity, right? He's in that state, so to leave him in that situation would be worse, because what's he going to do? He can't fend for himself. The two are related, he'll wind up stealing. I mean, the way I understand it is that this type, the one who stole over here, is not the stealing like a real thief, like he wants to make it as a career out of it. That's not the case. Otherwise, you see, he wouldn't want to stay after 6 years. Or that type of person would raise the money or whatever. That's not the case. In other words, the one who stole and couldn't pay back, it's because he stole out of poverty. It's basically really interrelated, I would say. Because it would be strange that two completely different things should have the same punishment or the same institution. But basically, it's the same thing. So the Torah allows him to sell himself. Really, he should be capable of organizing his life and being able to fend for himself, to become an independent operator. But if he can't, so the Torah has a temporary, the Torah envisioned this as a temporary situation. You see, for example, let's say he stole, and he couldn't pay back. So it's like he said, it's a person who couldn't organize, he did it not maliciously, he just couldn't put his life together. So what does the Torah do? Instead of just hitting him, we'll put him in a situation where he has an opportunity to put his life in order, like he has a father, he has a master. And in that situation, you see, he now has 6 years in which he can go through a process of development. He learns responsibility, he learns discipline, he learns how to work, you see? So in other words, the Torah really intended it as a process of rehabilitation. This is the real rehabilitation, you see? And in doing so, in other words, he'll see the master, he'll have respect for the master. The master runs a, because he's not a poor guy, the master, he has to be someone who's established a business. And you see, the Torah implores the master to treat him decently. So he has an opportunity to put his life in order. But the objective is that it should be viewed as a process of rehabilitation and to complete the maturity which he hasn't achieved, and then to go. Then to go, but not to recognize, you see, that not to believe that this is a good, inherently a good state to be in. That's why he's not pierced right away. But the question is, what is the nature of the defect? The defect, in other words, there's two kinds of defect. There's two kinds of defect. There's one which is a situational phenomenon. A person just has a defect because of a situation, circumstance. He didn't achieve a certain development. He didn't achieve a certain function. He can overcome it. But it's not a part of the gavra, in other words. The guy, given the right situation, he can work it out. That's why his ear is not pierced right away. See? But if after 6 years, you see, after 6 years, he still wants to stay, so what does this indicate? This indicates that it's a deeply rooted thing. It's not just a simple thing anymore. It's a deeply rooted thing. It's not just such a situational thing, but it's a very serious, deeply rooted problem. Now his ear must be pierced. Why does the ear have to be pierced?
Why does it come out?
Because, in other words, he'd have the same thing. What are you going to gain by kicking him out? In other words, if he'll revert back, he's not ready. He's not ready. Although we do see that the Torah will only tolerate it. That shows that it's only tolerated to Yovel. There must be a point where the guy goes free. Yeah, Yovel, he goes free. He throws him out. He's allowed to throw him out. He has no choice at that stage. You see? In other words, the Torah does make it clear, has to demonstrate that the institution, by its very nature, is a negative one. So the most it's willing, first it's for 6 years. Then if he insists, then Verotza. Now why Verotza comes in at this point, I would say, is because this is to remind the person that he has this defect, because the person is in a state of denial. Where do we see that he's in a state of denial? In other words, now the pasuk says, "Ahavti eshti," right? The real reason is not because Ahavti eshti as banai, right, and all that. What's the real reason why he doesn't want to go free? Because he needs, exactly. Because he really enjoys the state of dependency, right, of having a father to take care of him. He wants to avoid the challenges of reality. He doesn't want to live in that world. But the rationalization, he doesn't admit that to himself. He chooses rather to rationalize. I don't have a defect. Nobody wants to admit that they have a defect. You see? Nobody wants to admit that they have a defect. So everybody always invents, puts things in the best possible light. You know. They always change necessity into a virtue. In other words, the person is doing something because he really he'll try and rationalize it. So the same thing over here. In his own mind, it's not because there's anything wrong with me. It's the situation. Why should I leave the situation? That's why the ear has to be pierced. But the ear has to be pierced he has a permanent reminder of the fact that he's got a defect that has to be worked on. And now the Torah is giving him one further opportunity to work on it. That's till Yovel. Yovel could be a lot of years. It could be a few years. I mean, it depends. That depends when the next Yovel is. That's the way the system was set. Once the Torah designed Yovel, for one person it could come out of Yovel as a year away, or Yovel could be 45 years away. It doesn't make any difference. You see? But that's the nature of the phenomenon. So what else do we have to explain? Now we understand why it's after 6 years. See? In other words, not right away. Because it's true that he has a defect. But the question is it just a circumstantial thing? And given the right circumstances, he's subject to rehabilitation. So that's the first opportunity, 6 years. If after 6 years, however, he wants to stay in the institution, that shows that he has a very deeply ingrained as a part of him defect. And the tendency over here is to simply deny it, to negate it. Ahafti asishti. That's why the Torah says he has to be terata. Now, the two, what about Lo Tigno? What about Ed's question? What about for the case? This explains, everything we said explains for the person who sold himself out of poverty. What about Geneva? Why Geneva and not every time a person violates? Right? Because you could ask another question. I mean, why isn't it strange that two completely different defects, so to speak, Geneva and selling yourself as a slave, should find one common institution, one common punishment, so to speak? And it's very, very strange. I would say, you see, Pinny, I would differ from you over here. That's right. The Ganef over here, it's like a child. It's not the Ganef. Well, I'm not going into the psychology of all different Ganef. If they meet, that's another question. I don't know if it stems from a certain arrogance. I would say it's like a child. It's like it's coming to him. You see? Well, all right. Yeah, I know that. But I mean, like, I'm saying it seems to be that this person did it out of inability, out of poverty.
No, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Although the I mean,
although the question could be raised against him is that there's no both Pineda and Gazela, you know, even the one with like armed robbery,
right?
Which is clearly, I mean, aggression, arrogance, not dependent.
Well, you see, there is that. They both see the Ganef in general. They both share in this thing, though. See, they both have this defect in common. I think it's underneath it. It doesn't matter the armed or the. In other words, the malice, I think you're right.
I know, but they're both
the common denominator beneath both of them is the inability to subject himself to the world of reality. In other words, he remains in an infantile state. Like, why should I have to work for a living? There's a certain, there is a, there's a very, there's a certain psychological syndrome. In other words, there are people that regard themselves. A great psychoanalyst wrote an essay called The Exception. There are people that view themselves as being exempt from the requirements of reality. Like, they're different. He said that usually, I find it a very common thing, that these are people that suffered some tremendous deprivation in youth. And they feel that because of what they've been through, like, they have to be treated according to special rules. Yeah, but I think that even without that, there's a certain tendency in everybody to be the favored, right? Like, the world owes him a living. That mentality. The world owes him a living. Why should I work? It's something like he could never outgrow the childhood situation when everything was provided for him. He can't accept the reality that the world does not owe him a living. Now, to a certain extent, I think that's part of everybody's psychological makeup. That emotion is there. You can see it coming out, and you know. But where it's reached the point, see, the Gnev is worse. Is worse. The other person, you see, who is worse of the two? It would seem to me offhand, right? The other person is selling himself as a slave, right? He's got, in other words, like this. I'll say, what is the difference between the two? Destroyed, that's right. He's more of a psychotic phenomenon. In other words, there's the neurosis, there's the neurotic phenomenon, and the psychotic phenomenon. In other words, the neurotic phenomenon is where the guy has the emotional problem. You know, what is the difference between the neurotic and the psychotic? You know the difference. Right, and the other person lives in that. You know what it means? In other words, like this. A neurotic has an emotion which is not in line. He can't conform his emotions to reality. But the mind is intact. He recognizes that he's not in line with reality. That's why he goes to hell. That's why Freud held that psychoanalysis can help neurotics, but not psychotics. You see? Because the basic condition for helping a person is that there is a part of the person which recognizes that he's not in line with reality, and he's going to work with you. He doesn't know how to do it. He's overcome. He does obsessive things. You see, he does obsessive things. Like, there's a thin line. There are many people that don't admit that it's neurosis. You see, certain people have obsessiveness. Because where the person can justify it, like crazy with neatness or cleanliness, to a crazy extent. Now, cleanliness, up to a point, is a virtue. Right? But then you see, there are plenty of people where you can see it's a crazy thing, because the slightest little, they go nuts. The slightest little stain, this, that, right? Now you'll see, here again, if you ask them why, they'll justify it. In their own mind, they'll justify it. No, you have to be clean, you have to get in order. If you don't, things fall apart. You know, they give all kinds of reasons, but these reasons cannot be backed up by reality. So that... Now the psychotic is where he doesn't recognize, you see... In other words, because of his emotions, he changes. In other words, he denies reality. He interprets reality in line with his emotions. He denies that. That's why we always discuss the philosophical neurotic and the philosophical psychotic. There are two kinds of people that come to a yeshiva, or that come to a shiur, and they hear philosophy. A lot of people come on the Sunday shiur, for example, right? And they enjoy it. And I always wonder, because some of these things are very, very, not just abstract, but points that really pertain to how a person should live. And if you accept them, then you'd have to really, you know, I'm not mentioning any individual, but you know that these people do not live that kind of life all week long, and they like to come in here, and they really enjoy it. But if they really enjoy it, and they believe that it's true, then you wonder, then how come you don't make the changes in your life? So that's what we call a philosophical neurotic. In other words, the person sees the ideas, right, and he knows it's true, but he can't adjust his emotions. That's the philosophical neurotic. But then there's another kind of person that can't. You see, people come in, they argue, like, they'll come once or twice, they won't come again. And they'll raise all kinds of arguments, they can't see the idea. And it's not, they don't have any rational grounds for it, because the emotions are so strong that it prevents them from even hearing the idea. That's a philosophical psychotic. That's the difference between the two. Now, I would say, using this, that the one who sells himself out of poverty is more like the neurotic. You follow what I'm saying? In other words, he is a dependent mentality. He has not achieved independence, but at least he doesn't claim that he has a right to take somebody else's thing. He recognizes that that's wrong. He feels that way, you see, but he doesn't do it. So he recognizes that he's got a problem. And he doesn't want to steal. He hasn't crossed that borderline. So that's why he sells himself. The other person, Losignov, would seem to me has gone one step further. In other words, the inner failure, the emotions that he feels has led him to distort his whole concept of reality. Like he feels he has a right to somebody else's property. I would say that's even worse. You see? I would say that's even worse. So it's really Losignov, you see, Losignov and Avodai Haim right? The Ritzia is really aimed at that same, what? At that same underlying defect. Except when it's Lo Signov, it's a more forceful condemnation. It's the ear which heard Lo Signov. That's even worse. You violated a direct command not to do something. Avadayim is a violation of a philosophical precept. That's such a terrible, you see what I'm saying? In other words, it's not as bad, you're not as far gone. The failure to achieve a philosophical ideal does not represent as much corruption as the outright violation of the prohibition of Lo Signov. But basically it's the same underlying defect. That's why the two merge together. You see? Two merge together. Really it's just one idea. And that explains why, Ed, that answers your kasha. Why this Avera, but not every Avera? Because that's not the every Avera has its own particular punishment, but every Avera is not done because of a defective personality. You see what I mean? The Ritzia over here represents a specific mode of behavior which is based upon the dependent mentality. In other words, a person who can never overcome the infantile feeling that the world owes him a living, that he should be freed from the demands of reality. That's what the Ritzia represents. And Geneva, you see, the Geneva is a sin, is a particular Avera, which is based upon that mentality, and it's reached a certain point where he distorts the whole system. But not every Avera entails it. You see what I'm saying? A guy did a Yisurei Bia, it doesn't mean to say it's just a taiva overcame him. That's a different type of thing. He doesn't get his ear pierced. You see what I'm saying? That's something else.